Welcome all. This talk is really meant about helping you, I hate to overuse the term like empower yourselves, but educate yourselves in how to be your own best healers. That's what the community health updates. I'm Gary Forsman, physician at Middle Path Medicine. So we'll take it along. Tonight's digestive difficulty is called the 4R program. Now this is very simple. Like when you talk about a sprained ankle, there's an acronym called RICE. Rest, ice, compression, elevation. So how do you heal a sprained ankle? You do these four things together. So the essence of the 4R program, instead of a cute name like RICE, is just 4Rs all together. But if you want to heal your GI tract, do these things all together. I cannot emphasize the importance of something like that, because you wouldn't say, gosh, I tried rest once for a sprained ankle and that sure didn't work. I tried ice once for a sprained ankle and that didn't work, because you weren't doing them all together. You see what I'm saying? So many people say, well, I've tried probiotics and I don't think that worked for me. Well, maybe you didn't use the right probiotic. Maybe you didn't do it with the rest of the R's. You see what I'm saying? So the idea, especially if you have a vexing digestive problem, obviously the more intense the problem, the more I work it up as a doctor, meaning the more tests I do, versus just kind of empirically trying things. The goal is to have you do the most you can without necessarily having a doctor's assistance, because that's the way medicine has always been. You're the best healer. You don't need a physician. Every time you have heartburn, you don't need to call the doctor on call. Okay? I once had a call at 3 o'clock in the morning, and somebody called me and says, I have heartburn. And I go, well, did you take an antacid? No. Did you do like that? Seriously? You're calling me at 3 o'clock in the morning and you haven't even tried for an antacid, you know? Try an antacid. Well, I don't know where to get one. I go, in my directory now? 7-Eleven, something else, 24-hour things. Go get it. Do not call me at 3 o'clock in the morning with heartburn. Yes, I did that. I think you can all tell I'm not joking. But that's self-care. You don't, you don't need somebody else to tell you what to do. We're supposed to figure out how to treat our own heartburn. The model that person was caught in was, oh my gosh, I can't do something without the doctor's approval. Please, we need to get you away for that the vast majority of times. Most heartburn is not a warning sign of esophageal cancer. It's a sign that you need to pay attention to yourself. So we're going to try to help you expand your list of questions. Everybody knows I talk about tools in a toolbox, okay? Expand your toolbox at home so you can help heal yourself. That's what this talk is about. So, the 4 R's, remove, replace, re-inoculate, repair. Obviously, we're going to go into each one of these, okay? And so, all of these things together. The more of these things you do together, the more likely you are to heal, whether it's the sprained intestine like the sprained ankle, okay? And that's why it's a good analogy. And this program is not mine. This is a functional medicine program, one of the multiple medical systems that I've studied. Okay, and so why do I stick with this one? Because it works so well if people use it. Okay, and does it apply to almost all digestive difficulties? Yes. Okay, so whether you have heartburn or constipation, same principles apply? Yes. Obviously, you tweak it along what symptoms you're dealing with, but we're trying to get better than symptom relief medicine. There's great symptom relievers out there. If I have heartburn, I take a swig of Melanta. I really do, okay? Because it's quick and it's effective, and I go, huh, I guess I shouldn't have had, chili at 9 p.m. and gone to bed. And go, huh, I think there's a lesson to be had there, And if long as my heartburn is just like that, which I'm fortunate, most of my cases of heartburn have been things like that, where I flat out deserved it. And then I get the lesson, treat the symptom. However, if you have symptoms you can't quite figure out, that's often because you don't know what questions to ask. I am, as your doctor, to help expand your array of questions. And go, wait a minute, I thought I was here for answers. No, you're actually here for more questions that you can answer. Remove. So the first R of this program, I have a sprained intestine, whatever it is, heartburn, constipation, inflammatory bowel disease, we start with the basics. The first R is to remove. Remove stressful eating habits. So this is a basic premise. Under stress, we know fight or flight responses. So I'm talking about primarily acute stress. The fight or flight response turns on adrenaline, turns on all the things that leads to increased blood flow to the brain, increase blood flow to the muscles so you can run from something, beat something out, or of course, as a human, figure out how to run from or beat something up better. Where does that blood come from? It comes from your GI tract and all the other areas where you deprioritize blood flow and you literally turn off your GI tract. And that's the joke. I crap my pants, I was so scared, right? Why is that? Because you dump out your digestion, you've got to run from the tiger, don't need to be carrying around poop, okay? You're scared and you throw up or something else like that. You're clearing out your GI tract. Now, those are dramatic examples of severe stress, so of course, under moderate or mild stress, it's, you know, a graded response, okay? So when we turn off, literally, under stress, turn off our GI tract and then put food into it, and then start wondering, why am I having problems here? You kind of go, hey, whoa, this is it, okay? This is one of the most important things. When I was a physician in UC Irvine, and my outpatient practice was in Irvine, my inpatient practice was at the hospital in Orange, and this is a true story, I noticed that I could be riding from the car from Irvine. You know how the freeways can be at lunchtime and things too, and you're under stress, you're trying to make it there, round on your patients, get back to your outpatient practice in time. So, of course, you would eat in the car. Okay, I'm not proud of this, this is just what I did. You know, and I honestly ate well even back then, and so, and would have an apple, and that would be one of my most common things. And I could get heartburn. And then I honestly had this thing where I was on one weekend, and I was eating, I like apples, and I was eating this apple on the weekend, and no heartburn. And it occurred to me, the problem's not the apple, the problem's me, right? At the time of eating the apple. And this is one of the premises, especially in Ayurvedic medicine, is it's much more important the digestive fire than even what wood you're putting in there, meaning what food you're putting in. If your digestive fire is not stoked, then you can put the best food in the world into your stomach. Think of it as a little flickering flame. You put in the best wood and you can put out the fire, can't you? All right? And so that's the whole point. If we're under stress, we do not have a good digestive fire. If we're settled, we can say grace before a meal, silence, presence, present moment awareness. That in and of itself helps the cephalic phase of digestion, which means the mental phase of digestion. And that improves our ability to digest just by being present. And that's why in that system it said, actually, a roaring fire, if you have a roaring fire versus good wood, which would you take from a digestive standpoint? And it's a roaring fire every time. A roaring fire can take crappy wood and turn it still into decent energy. Whereas poor digestion, little flame, good food, and you can still have huge problems. And that's why sometimes you can't figure out why you're having that bloating problem or that headache after meals or the brain fog sometimes and not others, because it's due to the power of your digestion. Do you see that? You see how? And this is one of the most important things, because you can correct your digestion just by being present with your food. All right? So don't turn off your GI tract and then put food into it. Because, and remember, your symptoms are going to be different than someone else's. One person's going to get bloating, one person's going to get headache, another person's going to get a rash, given the same problem with digestion. So the first R, this is so important, and people blow it off, remove stress from eating. Eating with awareness means this: treat your meal as if it is a movie. You're going to make your body, it's an alchemical process where we take something outside, apparently outside of our body, our food, and bring it into us to make us. It's truly a magical process if you actually think about it. And that's why it's so important to be present with it so we can hear our food talk to us. Many of you have heard me say this too. Jon Kabat-Zinn's book, Wherever You Go, There You Are, he discusses his pain management practice and how one of the first steps is to get people eating a raisin as a meditation. I recommend Jon Kabat-Zinn's mindfulness works all the time. Jon Kabat-Zinn, Kabat-Zinn. And so that point being, and I know you guys have probably heard me say this before, McDonald's hamburgers, hundreds of billions served or whatever the heck they say. And if you take a Big Mac, I promise you, get away from McDonald's and sit it in front of you. Let it communicate with you. I promise you, a different conversation will come to your awareness, which is, wow, that doesn't look very good, okay? But no premeditation, like, and look at your intention to eat that hamburger. Bring it to your mouth, the smell, then be aware of the textures, your intention to taste it. put your mouth around that Big Mac, actually feel the textures and taste. And honestly, it takes you one bite to realize hundreds of billions of times people have had every information of what not to eat, and we overrode it because we were running around too fast, Happy Meals, whatever else, because that meat is a mystery meat. It does not identify as a meat anywhere in your brain. The sauce is not special. The lettuce is wilted. The bread is pathetic. It's horrible. It is truly horrible. And then you have to say, oh my gosh, how many times have I done this where I completely overrode what my body was trying to tell me to do because I wasn't paying attention? And that's the power of presence. Okay? Bring it as a practice to eating, and it can become a practice in every part of your life. Okay? That time where you're watching the TV show and you're not feeling so good, turn off the TV show. Your whole system is saying it's not right for you because you are ingesting that TV show or the conversation or the whatever, okay? So when I say eat slowly and deliberately, it's to enjoy this process more. So many people talk to me, even today I had someone, well, you know when you're stressed and you just want to have ice cream, and it's like, I understand that. Okay, I do. Everybody knows I used to love ice cream. Okay, but I haven't had any, and I don't know how long. I mean, it's just not a part of my field of awareness anymore. So no, under stress, I don't want ice cream anymore because it's not what I do. All right, it's not something I placate myself with. So, and the reason being is because you listen to your body before the food, during the food, and after the food to let you know how well that food makes you run. Remember how you're putting energy into your system? You're supposed to run better. I actually don't run better when I put ice cream into me, if I really objectively pay attention, as much as I wanted to and how many times I tried it, okay? With or without whatever things, it just didn't work. I don't run well on ice cream. I'm not saying you do, but that's the point, is we want to empower ourselves now. Yet again, that word, but from a real authentic standpoint, where we don't let the whole world tell us how to eat anymore. We listen to ourselves. It's not about forks over knives or knives over forks or any of that real honest-to-God crap out there, because that's disempowering. That takes you away from actually listening to yourself because you have a premature cognitive commitment that it's good to eat broccoli when your body might be telling you broccoli's bad for me today. And it's bad to eat whatever, beef or something, because somebody told you it was bad, and it's not inherently true. Okay? Listen to your own bodies. This is a powerful, powerful moment, because, and why I'm spending more time on this, because this is the most important slide of tonight's talk, all right? Because it's letting your body learn from your symptoms. Because if you're constipated, or you have heartburn, or anything else, it's a cry. Everybody's heard me say this. Your symptoms are your teachers, all right? Be present with your teachers. If you're fighting your teachers, pushing down the symptoms, not wanting to listen, you learn nothing. You have to learn from your symptoms. That's the only intelligent thing to do. We have to learn from what's going on in our world and our external world, okay? And, of course, remove the elbows, because, question, can anyone here tell me what Hansen is doing wrong with his elbows? Nobody can digest well when their elbows are on the table. Remove the elbows, first R. I'm just kidding, people. Get with me. I'm not Miss Manners, really, okay? These are Vikings. It's funny. See, he's got the leg thing. They're complaining about the elbows. But anyways, but it did seem to fit right in to remove the elbows from the table, you know, because manners can be important sometimes. It's not what I'm known for. Be present. So, remove. Removing irritants. Now, this goes into another principle. Let's say I sprained my ankle playing tennis, okay? Does playing racquetball still make it feel bad? Yes, okay? So here's another moment for you people. You might have had something that caused you heartburn. Now a whole bunch of things can now cause you more heartburn because you have a sprained intestinal tract. So many times we forget there are things that cause the problem, initiators, as well as promoters. So let's say you hadn't had wine in a while, but now you have heartburn. Well, it can't be wine. Wine's still got to be good for me, and you keep drinking wine. No, wine is a nonspecific irritant if you have heartburn, most of the times. So there's certain things that just almost always, okay, now of course there's personal things. I'm sure there's some people, oh no, I'm always feel better when I have wine. that might be another thing talking. So anti-inflammatory drugs, sodas, other medicines, any food that you've had a personal history of not doing well with can now make your problem worse and worse. And this is part of that confusing thing. Because if you already heard me say, if you're under stress, even a good food like an apple can be a problem. And you go, wait a minute, is the problem apples? No, it's how I am when I eat the apple. Furthermore, however, even not under stress, most of the times, these irritants, and of course, if you know you just don't do well with grandma's chili, even if you haven't had it for 6 months, don't eat it when you're having a problem. It doesn't make sense. Even if it didn't initiate the problem, it can promote the problem, right? This is such an important thing. High cholesterol most of the times is almost never the cause of heart disease, but it can, on rare occasions, promote the problem. Initiation versus promotion, not always the same thing, okay? So as we go in, we're still under our first R, remove, okay? And this is, again, there's not fun things to take for this. This is about you and personal responsibility, making choices that are right for you. So when we talk about food sensitivities, there's definitely toxins in our diets, MSG, artificial sweeteners. Most of you know the paleo principles I'm trying to get work with. Now, why am I going to this paleolithic anybody who's been to the recent talks know that I do that. I'm not going to re-harp on that. The basic premise, eat real food. There's a lot of garbage in our food that we can be reacting to, from dyes to preservatives. It goes on and on and on and on. There is no reason to put in an artificial sweetener of any kind ever into your body, ever. If you do it, you are diluted. You truly are. Anybody here tonight who uses an artificial sweetener is diluting themselves. They are diseasifying themselves. And often wonder why they have the symptoms when they're trying to cause the disease. And it's not, remember, this isn't about me being mean. It's just the truth of it. Artificial sweeteners. There's another recent study. If your body gets in something sweet without calories associated with it, it completely mucks up your brain chemistry and makes you more hungry because your brain doesn't know what to do with it. You get hungrier, okay? You eat more. Every study on artificial sweeteners shows more weight gain, that meaning diet soda causes more weight gain that in 9 out of 10 studies as compared to regular soda with sweeteners, okay? So why do I do the diet sweetener? And because you've been sold something that's not true. That's all. Okay? So, and this goes back to the basic premise. If you ever hear about somebody replacing something in nature with a food substance different than that, a non-dairy creamer is 10 times worse for you than cream. Okay? Margarine is about 10 times worse for you than butter. I could go on and on. Never once, so until this rule changed, has there ever been anything artificial that replaced something in nature that was better for the person. Ever. That's 100% proof right there. So why are you doing it? Just ask yourself. It's up to you. If you have digestive problems, maybe that's your brain, the more important big YU or big S self telling you, dude, what are you doing putting this stuff in? We have no place for this in our body. So paleo principles, eating right for your type, the role of lectins, and again, that falls under the same concept, okay? What are the non-specific irritants of the GI tract? Sugars, artificial foods, okay, and grains and lectins. Now, lectins are a huge subject, and I'm not going to go into them. The reason we pick on bean lectins is because they are the most agglutinating, which is its own talk. Gluten-free the way to be talk? And that's a whole two-hour presentation just on that, okay? That's more fun than you should be allowed to have. So you can get a better understanding. But here's what I want you to understand. When I say glue is a direct toxin like cigarette smoke, it is, okay? Grains and glutens, this is the truth of what they are, okay? Gluten comes from the word for glue because we recognize them. Everybody recognizes the glutens of the world, not just barley, rye, and wheat, okay? So why do we pick on barley, rye, and wheat? Because it's the only one known, proven to cause an autoimmune disease, okay? So why do we pick on that form of gluten? Because there's many more, okay? Because it causes a disease. We know that. And since that gluten and the rest of the glutens, corn gluten, rice gluten, all these toxins are direct glue to your system. So if I pour super glue on your forearm and rip something off and you start bleeding, is that because you're allergic to super glue? No, it's a glue. It's a direct toxin, okay? When a cigarette smoke causes cancer or heart disease, it's not because you're allergic to it. It's because it's a toxin. Glutens are toxins. They are glue. You can make glue out of them, actually. Okay? So it's a nonspecific disruption of your intestinal border. Subsequently speaking, anything else can occur once you've disrupted your intestinal tract, meaning other food sensitivities, autoimmune diseases. And there's an autoimmune component to almost all chronic disease, degenerative arthritis, wrinkling, coronary artery disease, all that stuff has an autoimmune component. Now, this is really important. The only known cause of any autoimmune disease are grains. They're a direct poison, okay? I don't know how many clues we need here. It's a lot like the smoking thing because everybody was doing it. The Surgeon General in, I think it was 1950-something or 60, said there's no way you'll prove smoking causes cancer because, well, everybody's smoking, okay? So, of course, the person with lung cancer is smoking. So is everybody else. And so everybody's doing this. You might have a rash. You might get a brain fog. You might get a headache. You might get whatever, burping. There's going to be some symptom that will let you know, huh, I wonder if this isn't quite right for me, all right? That's what you listen to. And then down the road, you just eat the way you eat, focusing on real food. What percentage of elk or broccoli determined by you, not by some people on Forks Over Knives or not by somebody in the paleo principle, because your body says, I run better on elk. That sounds good. Or run with a deer. Sorry, was that kind of theme? Anyways. But you let you determine that, not somebody on TV, not me or anything else. Or if you run better on blueberries and broccoli, for heaven's sakes, that's what you eat. If you go through this whole thing and you find I do better as a raw food vegetarian, then be a raw food vegetarian. Eat real food, though, okay?
How does that relate to lectins?
We were talking about lectins as being part of the beans, okay? And that's there's lectins in all foods. So that's why some people look at the eat right for the type your type model, but that's one thing. But we clear out the beans as part of the paleo principle, at least for 3 weeks. So the idea is eat paleo for at least 3 weeks. There's entire talks on this, okay? Then if you want to introduce something like beans, and yes, you can soak them and do better. There's all kinds of things you can do, okay? So, but then you reintroduce to see if you really are one of those people that respond to the lectins and beans instead of inherently just saying, gosh, I can never have a bean ever again because somebody told me to. It will now become you try a black bean, you eat it, you're metabolically okay. Huh, now I guess I can eat that or I guess I can't. Okay? Because we want you to be the one to determine that. For instance, dairy intolerance. In most systems of healing, dairy is not just food, it's medicine. So this idea that eating dairy of any kind is bad for us couldn't be further from the truth from an inherent medical, any standpoint. Okay? Wow, what is the problem? It goes back to I recently did an article on I'm much more concerned about MMOs, metabolomically modified organisms, than I am genetically modified organisms. And what that means is, back to the Midwest, corn prices going up. We're going directly now to feeding high fructose corn syrup to our cows, candy, okay, because it's less expensive than the corn itself. We're getting so far away from putting real food into our animals, which is what we're eating. Whether you eat the meat or whether you take the milk from it, it's the same thing, right? The what has become milk is a completely, truly genetically altered, if you look at not the genes being altered, the expression of those genes completely altered by bathing your genes in garbage. Okay, so whether you're bathing your genes in garbage or you're bathing the cow's genes in garbage, you get a completely different genetic expression. It's called proteomics, metabolomics. It's its whole field of study. We won't bore you with that tonight. Whether it's cheese or butter or whatever else, you're still getting the milk from it, right? Okay, so the lactase can help people if they have a lactose intolerance, which is a separate problem from which is our food supply has to come from real food. Okay. Because is that a huge problem right now? We're not eating real foods and our bodies are backing up on us. That's the problem. And that's why this first R is so, so important. Not just, gosh, what can I take? There are some wonderful things to help improve digestion. And I'm not, even shying away from that stuff. This stuff is really what matters to me. Now, the concept of food allergies. There's so many ways we can react to a food. They really are food sensitivities. Okay. So remember, The first level of reaction to food. I'm stressed, I turned off my GI tract, I put something in and it screwed me up, no matter if it was manna from heaven. Okay, that's the first level of problems that we're having. There's certain things you're uniquely sensitive to, just the way you're made, you know. You're from Central Africa, you don't do well with whale blubber, don't eat it. Okay? Okay. It's a good basic rule to follow. Okay, so, you know, so yes, there's going to be genetic reasons for some of these things. Okay? The foods, there's glue. You put glue in your body, and that's not an allergy. That's a direct toxin where you distorted and you ripped off your intestinal tract and it started bleeding. And you go, wow, I wonder why that happened. Because you put glue in there. It's pretty straightforward, you know. and so that's another reaction. The other thing is, how do I make antibodies, IgG, IgE, lymphocyte-mediated, and others? If you can't figure this out, this ALCAD is a lymphocyte-based test. I don't even remember what the ALCAD's the name of a company to me right now. It's a lymphocyte-mediated food sensitivity reaction that helps you determine what other foods you might be reacting to. So I've had many people where this test has been profoundly beneficial, and many people where it hasn't, okay? Don't anybody let you tell you food sensitivity testing is perfect, because it's not. It's better than not doing it, okay? And it helps us determine if you're allergic to, and see, I even still do it, sensitive to, not allergic, sensitive to, avocados or broccoli or blueberries are good foods too, because you might be, because remember, we've disrupted, we'll talk about the organisms in your intestinal tract, or we've ripped off our intestinal lining through eating bread or whatever else, and now we're sensitive to something because of those things. You can be sensitive to very good foods. And so when you're confused by your symptoms, you do more testing. Everybody knows that. If you know what's going on, the doctor doesn't order many tests. If we don't, we order a bunch of tests. Everybody knows I love tests, okay? So, so ALCAT Cyrex is the leader in terms of looking for gluten sensitivity. So if you say, well, I really want to see if I'm sensitive to gluten, their gluten panel is 20-some-odd tests. The standard doctor does a couple of tests looking for gluten sensitivity, and there's currently at least 25 that need to be run to see if you really are gluten sensitive. I actually tell people it's probably just not good not to eat toxins. Detoxification. I just put a little blurb here because detoxification is, once again, its own multi-hour talk, okay? But just think about this. Most systems of healing, now when I say most, every single system of healing before Western medicine said, if you're in human form, you're probably getting toxic, okay? If you're not just meeting enlightened people, you're self-enlightened, you're probably getting toxic. If you're breathing that thing known as air, you're getting toxic. You get the idea. So we're all getting toxic. And our cleaning mechanisms are inherently built into us, but sometimes, just like spring cleaning, you need to take the energy to do that, or the baseboards never get done. Now, what I mean by that is you've got to take out the time to detox. Every system of healing says a seasonal detox is a great idea, and it takes away the nonspecific dis-ease, okay, and dis-ease, discomfort that can become disease. And so if you have, say, well, I am feeling yucky, whether I eat or not, okay? I'm a little burpy, a little heartburny, a little just achy, a little tired. Those are toxicity symptoms, not usually diseases. When was the last time you did a detox? That was back in 19. You get the idea. It's been a while, probably. And so now everybody says, huh? So once again, this is expanding your list of questions. Gary, I'm taking enzymes and I'm eating good foods, and I still can't figure out why I still get heartburn. Well, when was the last time you detoxed? Oh, that's right. I felt so much better after I did that. Okay? And so their symptom, their heartburn, was really just a signal to them, huh, I'm building up some toxins. It's time for me to do a detox. Now, this is another one of the things, when we talk about meditation, everybody agrees on doing it. It's just, how do you do it? Detox, everybody agrees on detox. It's just, how do you do it? That's I could do a multi-week symposium on that to bore you guys to tears, but I'm just telling you, detoxification can be another question you should ask yourself if you can't quite figure out why your digestion is acting up, okay? Still under R, yes, still, okay? Because we're trying to think of things, what can I remove that would cause my symptoms, okay? We talked about removing stress and mindfulness eating, okay? Removing non-specific irritants, removing food sensitivities, sometimes getting testing to help us determine those. These things here, infectious diseases, are, when I say rampant, this very quick this GIFX test was by this company, Metametrics. It was such a better test than the one from this fairly famous integrative lab known as Genova Diagnostics that Genova just bought the company and scanned their stool test and now are doing this one. Okay, so I've been doing this one for quite some time because it is the best in helping us determine, do you have parasites? Do you have a candida syndrome? Do you have dysbiosis, an abnormal balance of colonic bacteria? It doesn't pick up on everything, but it's the best thing so far. Many people say, well, my doctor did a stool test, and I go, they didn't do this one. Okay. Can't tell you how many people have H. pylori, parasites, et cetera, when they've had local testing and it's been negative. Okay. So this, once again, the remove part, just to put in this, huh, I wonder if I'm reacting this way because I have a parasite. I wonder if I'm reacting this way if I have an abnormal balance of bacteria known as dysbiosis. See how these are good questions? Unfortunately, this is one level where you really do need a doctor usually. I don't recommend non-specifically going on parasite cleanses and other things unless you look for them. Every now and then that can help. So sometimes people do these things. They go on a round of a natural removal things. And we have these things up here. When everybody knows how much of a vitamin snob I am, and I am, because most people really do, especially in this area, buy the cheapest things and they don't work. So the number one reason their probiotic doesn't work is because they can't. their removal things don't work because, well, they can't. So when you're doing these things, look at this stuff. Candicid Forte. This is a well-developed natural antimicrobial. You don't necessarily use drugs. Drugs are the most powerful things, okay? So can I use things like this? Can I use Pylorosil to help with my body in terms of helping with H. pylori? Yes, I can. Tanelbit is another great antimicrobial. These things can help us. Sometimes we do these things without testing. Most of the times I don't go to this phase of stuff without testing first. But that's just because of my doctor side of things. Most people in the world probably just say, well, I'll try that and see how I do, instead of spending the money for the testing, because the testing can be expensive. And so look at those things in terms of what to help you remove stuff, but try good things. You've heard me say it before. If you're going to buy supplements, buy good ones. If you want to save money, buy nothing. Okay? It's the best rule to follow. I can save you the most money, obviously. Okay? So natural antimicrobials, sometimes we need to use drug antimicrobials. Sometimes I have to use an antibiotic, especially for H. pylori. Sometimes I have to use an antifungal for certain candidal overgrowths. But these are the kinds of things that can make a huge difference for people when they can't get there on their own. Most of the times, by the way, if you take care of the other R's, the right eating and the stress and the other things, your body can heal this stuff. It can come back into balance. That's the beauty of trusting your body to heal itself, is you can heal even if you don't take any of these things. Sometimes you need to. Please, I'm not saying different. But that's the beauty of taking care of yourself, working on your own fortress. It kind of keeps out the Huns. Okay? And there's always something in your microbiome, that whole, we're getting to your intestinal tract in just a little bit, that can be become a pathogen. Okay? You always have some yeast in your body, every single one of you. Okay? And if it overgrows, it can become a problem. All right? And if it doesn't, then it won't. Okay? So remove. First R, believe it or not. The rest hopefully go a little quicker than that. Questions so far about for our program, questions to ask. Cool. Yes? Is peanut butter a legume? Yes. Okay. So are snap peas, so are green beans. The idea is clear all that stuff out first, okay? The least pathogenic lectins in the legume family, thank you for bringing up, beans are legumes. Peanut is not a nut, it's a legume, okay? And so are green beans, etc. And I'm not trying to make green beans the end of the world. The idea is clear off everything, and if I started with legumes, the first thing I'd put in are snap peas and green beans because I like them, okay? How I do with them doesn't matter. It's a matter of how you do with them once you've gotten rid of the noise. Okay, the noise is clearing out all this garbage, artificial foods, grains, beans, so that you can see if you react to a peanut. Okay, I'm not anti-peanut in the least. Okay, it's just at some point you have to clear the stuff out, say it's a very potential significant toxin because of these things that are within it. Okay, and then I've cleared out the noise. I eat the peanuts, and I do fine. Again, try to stick with as much as we can, organic, etc., in terms of taste in trying them in our body. But yes, it is a legume that falls under. If you were just being completely staunch by the book Paleo, which is not what I'm trying to do, except for the first 3 weeks or so, or until you feel metabolically corrected, then try things that are usually good. I like green beans. I like snap peas. You have to start careful as you start heading towards, say, the black beans the world is. And this is an important thing. If you go back to in my practice, I used to have many people there, especially the Mexican farm workers, and they would be working all day long. I mean, I'm talking about brutal lives, and have guts out to here. Beans and corn. If you want to get fat, you can work all day long, eat beans and corn. You'll be a fat person. Okay? So if you want to eat beans, you want to be fat. Okay? I mean, it's really, even if you're working hard, it's one of the most uniform things that can do it because it's a high carb load. There are some decent proteins. Again, beans aren't evil. They're just one of the most likely things to look at if you have excess weight, metabolic syndrome, all the things that are rampant in our society. Yes?
I found that very uncomfortable to me because I didn't like my food diet. I'd be a very limited diet.
Right.
And I wanted to read a magazine to distract me so I would enjoy my meal. I'm getting that is wrong.
Well, again, I think you know if you listen to that, you're trying to distract yourself so you'll put things into you that you wouldn't otherwise, okay? And so what do we do? You know, when we talk about stress, just in a brief, you know, stress management, I have an entire package on the website yet again, okay, so that there's four basic ways we handle stress, okay? There's true stress unloading, which is taking stress out of our lives, okay? So, and part of what we're talking right now is, let's not watch the news while we're doing, you know, trying to eat. Let's not do a magazine. Let's just be present with our food. Yes, you've unfortunately been one of those people who have had developed a very unhealthy relationship with their food. That's something that needs to be corrected directly. So you don't correct a relationship with a loved one by saying, I'm going to read a magazine instead of talking to you. Okay, that's essentially what you're doing. I'm not trying to make you cry, sweetheart. I'm just, yeah. And that's why it's... But it's such an important part. And that would become, and can that self-replicate it? You have all my love and empathy for that, okay? But that's the problem, is that there's a little war going on with your food. And that's true out there. I mean, you know, so do I know if it's the intuition? I used to, you know, Coors Light's this horrible beer, but every now and then I just had to drink it because they had the best billboards. and it's like, I just want to support them because that's a hell of a billboard. Now, did I really want Coors Light because it tasted good or because of something else going off in my brain? It's a true story, sorry. And so I don't do that anymore because it's horrible. For me, I don't like Coors Light. So how do I know if this is marketing that wants me to eat this or intuition? Because you pay attention to how you feel during and after, and you let your body tell you. Because if you have an instinct, oh, I just want Kentucky Fried Chicken, is that because it was on the TV or because you really want that? So that's one level of problem. And then there's sometimes a problem with throughout our life, it's been such a difficult thing. And whether, honestly, with people have the same relationship with exercise. I hate it. I just never, you know. Seriously, I used to hate running for most of my life because I learned it as a punishment. I've run, I don't know how many miles in punishment. Forsman! You know, and they just wouldn't even have to say anything. I just had to run miles. And so, because I was a smart ass when I was a kid, you know, and so that didn't go over well with the coaches. And so I learned running as a punishment. And so it was very difficult to get myself running as, you know, something that was good for me, really. I mean, you know, you learn it as a punishment. And so over time, you can rebuild that relationship. That might sound silly, but that's the thing with exercise, and it's true with food. The idea is that the importance of making your body with the things, because this is, again, the truth of today's world is your environment is your extended body, okay? It's just an illusion that there's a separateness, okay? So you are choosing what part of the body to make whole. That's why polluting and all kinds of other things are you spoiling yourself, not spoiling the environment. And that's when, you know, so in this case, this is a very important time to pay attention to our food and see which ones, if we can find a few things that we interact with. And the healthier we are with those few things, we expand upon. Because there's primarily, it is true that most foods will be good for you if you're well-balanced. Okay, so it's about balancing yourself first. Okay, and so, because in the end, I think national parks are beautiful, and I think beaches are beautiful, and I think mountains are beautiful. Why? Because it's all part of a different aspect of the extended self. And so our food is our extended self. And so making that part of you is an amazing process. It needs to be honored. And if your body's giving you symptoms, wow, that I'm not doing well with this, and you have that relationship, it just means it's a very important relationship to heal. And there's not anybody who can't understand parts of what you're going through, maybe not to the extent, okay? So thank you for asking. It's a learned behavior, just like trying to repair a relationship can be very difficult, okay? But we really can't repair that relationship, whether it's food or some loved one, by reading a magazine and ignoring it. It just can't happen. Yes?
I noticed that gluten-free bread seems to be made with tapioca. What's tapioca, and is that nutritious? I don't know.
Tapioca is cassava, and so it's a root. Again, the idea, look at the carb content, first of all, is tapioca. There's most gluten-free breads, they're using that just as the agglutinating agent, the cassava, the tapioca. They're making it with other grains, though, okay? The only breads that really fall into the paleo are the paleo breads made with almond flour and coconut flour. And so those are the only ones, if you wanted to eat a bread that would fit into that. No, they aren't the tastiest thing in the world. I just said they fit into the system. Yeah. I'm not disagreeing. You didn't hear me say I thought, oh, wow, these are the tastiest things in the universe. I just said they fit into the system, okay? And every now and then, I'll put some almond butter and heat it up, and you know, you can barely taste it, really. I've done that. But we don't want to put a toxin into our body. And that's the thing, is that the gluten-free breads have their own glutens. They have high levels of carbs and sugars, and they aren't any healthier for almost anybody. No. Correct. It's all grains, not just the... Because rice has a gluten, corn has a gluten. They are related glutens, not the classic gluten. Remember, the only reason we think of gluten, okay, as being the barley, rye, and wheat is because it's the only one known to cause an autoimmune disease. But the other ones are glutens too. They're just different glutens in the same family. Okay.
If you are trying to do a cleanse and you have a nutrition power that's a plant has already made and say that bars are perfect, how do you do that?
They have removed most all of that. So is rice protein, a purified rice protein, still okay for a cleanse? Yes. Okay, replace. Second R. Okay, so remove. We've done that. Remember, doing all these things together, just like the acronym RICE for the sprained ankle. I've just rested my ankle. Is the ankle going to get better without more attention? No. Okay. Is my sprained intestinal tract going to get better just with some rest and taking care of it? It can, of course, okay, just like you can rest, you know, sprained ankle and it gets a little better. But so same concept. Replace is to recognize everyone is born with a certain digestive capacity, just like everybody's born with a certain 100-yard dash, etc. We have a different capacity. As we age, does that capacity diminish? Yes. Is it likely at some point that you will, especially if you're an overeater, eat more than you can digest? Again, whether it's manna from heaven or not, okay? So, yes, you can over, and that's why the first steps is to remove stress. So you eat slowly and consciously, and you will naturally eat less and be less likely to exceed your digestive capacity. That's the first and most important part of this replace, really, is the first step. Because that's, you know, overeating, as we know, is a huge problem. And we can exceed our capacity. It really would be as simple as I can jump from here to here, and I can do that each time. But if I give myself a larger gap, I can't jump it. You can't digest a certain amount of food sometimes. So slowing down is the first step. But a broad spectrum enzyme. I like Digestizyme V from Orthomolecular Spectrazyme because that's the most consistent. It's a doctor-oriented companies that make these things appropriately and well to improve digestion. The idea is take enzymes with meals. Now, you don't have to live your life around enzymes. Start eating, take your enzymes. You don't have to take them 20 minutes before. You don't have to take them 20 minutes after. Just take them during eating. So that can be a confusing thing for people because sometimes the label on the bottle makes it more complicated. And this is very straightforward. And if you know you're going to eat Thanksgiving dinner and you don't really have an option not to eat a lot, okay? The saddest thing I ever saw sometimes with my mom when the first time I didn't eat a big Thanksgiving dinner, it was like I might as well like shot her or something, you know? It's like, why? A normal plate. You don't love me anymore. Really. And so you better overeat for mom. It's just the rules. And I'm just sort of kidding, but but a smarter thing is to be eat less, of course. But or, you know, slip in some enzymes and, you know, and help yourself digest. So enzymes can be useful sometimes for certain meals. I know some people, their digestive capacity was just born low. It got worse with age. They have to take enzymes with meals to help them digest. Help support your digestion. Now, this is another key concept. It's much better to support digestion while treating symptoms than to suppress digestion while treating symptoms. Pretty much every symptom reliever that is a drug suppresses symptoms, sometimes very well, and makes your digestion much worse. Much worse. Okay? So when you take a chronic antacid, you have not only not listened to your body's symptoms, you have just added multiple diseases to your body if you continue to take it chronically. Do everything you can not to take a symptom reliever without paying attention to why. Okay? Furthermore, if you do need something, it's much better to give yourself enzymes to improve digestion as compared to an antacid. An antacid, remember, eliminates your acid or diminishes it, okay? And then now the acid going into the intestinal tract can't activate your enzymes, okay? So if you do that, you're chronically malnourished. You have to be, okay? Yes?
If I have adequate digestion now, and I started taking Spectazyme, will my body then rely on Spectazyme so that if I stopped taking it, I wouldn't have adequate?
The question is there some feedback mechanism that if you take enzymes that maybe your body will stop making them? And the answer is no, okay? It's not one of those things that has a feedback loop that suppresses your own enzymatic production. And so it's a good question because you have to think about that for so many other things. Because it's really not a hormone that we're dealing with. It's just basically adding enzymes. Your body's going to keep making whatever enzymes it can. Okay. Certain people believe at a certain age, if you aren't a raw food, whatever else, you're not going to have the enzymatic capacity to digest things. I think that's a little overstated. But some people, you know who you are. You're going to need some digestive aids even when you're eating healthy foods. Yes?
I wanted to back up a little bit about the gluten. Mm-hmm.
It's the other grains. So what you have is a personal truth, not a universal one. Okay, and so that's you have to be careful. I said nothing more dangerous than a believer. Okay, so you have something that works for you. Okay, and I never want to take that away from you. Okay, so this doesn't mean it all of a sudden doesn't work. You know, and so what you'll find on average though is you have to clear out all the grains because that was the essence of the why is gluten free the way to be talk is because. 5-7 years ago, you used to have people go gluten-free, but they couldn't find anything, okay, because there wasn't stuff around. So they pretty much had to be pretty much grain-free because they couldn't find anything, and it was a great system. The last several years, everything gluten-free, macaroni and cheeses to whatever else is out there, so going gluten-free was not that difficult, and it doesn't work anymore, almost ever. Now, in your case, it did. So your probably primary sensitivity is to the gluten found in barley, rye, and wheat, okay? And now that you've been 15 years, you don't need to retry anything else probably as long as you're doing well metabolically. But on average, is that true? No. The tapioca is just what you're using as a thickening agent, okay? That's the other grains that we're concerned about more than the tapioca, okay? Yes?
Can we consider then quinoa liver enzyme?
Quinoa is a grain even though it's a pseudo-cereal. It's closer related to, I think, kale or spinach. I can't remember. But it does have proteins that cross-react with glutens. That's the whole point, okay? So is quinoa, if I clear the slate, is that the one of the grains that I would try because it's a good food? Yes. And it's, you know, so on that on average, most people, because quinoa is closer related to greens than it is to grains, okay, G-R-E-E-Ns instead of A-I-N-S, okay, that you won't react to it. But that's one of the things I would take out during the first 3 weeks, and then if you really wanted something with quinoa or whatever else, try it and see how you did with it. Then, if you did well with quinoa, I have something that I can put in there and I can have this as part of my repertoire, okay? usually on a rotation, because you still have to be careful about carb loads and other things if you just, you know, become the quinoa queen. And you're right, if you eat something all the time, can you start becoming sensitive to it? It depends on how healthy your digestive tract is. Okay, so digestive enzymes. Now, this goes into a lot with the, I'm going to do it with my clicker. Thank you. So there are so many digestive aids, digestive bitters in Europe. Ginger tea, I don't even have this on the slides, but, you know, the pickled ginger. Some people just respond to some of the classic digestive aids of old. Ginger, fresh ginger root tea is a classic detoxer and digestive aid. Please don't lose sight that that can be a wonderful healing thing. It's better to use fresh ginger root. And when I say fresh ginger root tea, either have a hot water dispenser or boil up some water, put it in the thermos, and slice in some ginger, okay? But just let it steep, and you have ginger root tea, okay? And so ginger is one of the great universal digestive aids, and that can be something that can help your digestion instead of just taking enzymes. Chewing some fennel seeds after dinner is a classic, it's called a carminative anti-gas agent, okay? So trying some of the traditional remedies, I'm not trying to get away from people away from these, these broad-spectrum enzymes just on average work better, okay, and more completely than little things like that, because if you just take papaya enzyme, it's one little protease, and it doesn't. A broad-spectrum enzyme has so many different other things, it's much more likely to work for you. Now, if your personal truth is, no, I like papaya enzymes, and it does great for my digestion, yay, but it's just not a broad spectrum. It's just a very isolated thing. Now, well, I'm addicted. Have you tried Carol Sheep Dip? So this goes into what you're eating and what meals, what things you might need to take enzymes with. Sorry, I like this one. I can't help but the little head sheep dip. Anyways, so there's certain times really to use digestive enzymes is kind of the take home. Anyways, and also there's a little thing about using, especially for protein digestion, adding hydrochloric acid. All right. Now, back to what we were saying. On average, if it's heartburn or any number of things, most people have too little acid, not enough acid. So too little, not too much, okay? So, and this is what I want you to hear. Let's say heartburn is your symptom, okay? The problem with heartburn, and you don't have to memorize this, is called transient lower esophageal sphincter relaxations, okay? That's the problem, all right? That's really, I know, it just flows right off the tongue. But that's the problem, okay? And what it means is the lower esophageal sphincter relaxes for some reason, a variety of reasons behind that, and stuff in your stomach goes up into your esophagus. The stuff in your stomach is very acid. Okay. Now, the acidity in the stomach is a logarithmic scale. So if you have normally about a pH of 2.5, 3, okay, let's just use 3, a pH of 3 in the stomach, which is very acid, and you had one-tenth as much acid that you should, you'd have a pH of 4 down there. One-tenth as much acid, pH of 4. pH of 4 is very acid, okay? That pH 4 stuff, when you're really low acid, goes up in here, oh, I've got too much acid. You pour in an antacid, okay, and the pH goes to 7, and when that stuff goes up into your esophagus, it doesn't burn anymore, and you go, wow, I had too much acid. You see how sometimes you can fool yourself, okay? Because you just neutralize the pH with the antacid, and now the stuff in the wrong place is at least neutral, so it doesn't burn anymore. But you still have the same exact problem, but now, especially if you do this chronically, with chronic antacids, you've really dramatically reduced your digestive capacity when you already had a digestive problem to begin with. And you've eliminated a symptom that your body was trying to tell you to do something, and you won't listen anymore because you just suppressed your symptom. So chronic antacids are linked with pretty much every disease you can think of because it affects every aspect of your digestion, your immune system, endocrine function, everything. Okay. Chronic antacids, especially the prilosexin, will cause leaky gut syndrome, which is another thing to cause inflammation in your body. They're one of the most horrible things ever invented because they're so effective at treating symptoms that people just keep taking them. And your doctor unwittingly just continues to give them to you because you feel better. And if the doctor wins that symptom, they don't really care about the rest of the stuff because you feel better and you're going to be happy with them. Okay. And so hydrochloric acid is completely the opposite of taking an antacid. You see that, right? Okay. And therefore more dangerous, by the way. If you have, I think I said, if you, what's the next one? If you I'm talking already about the extreme danger of using chronic antacids, but if you have active ulcers, gastritis, unexplained upper abdominal pain, do not do this, okay? Yes, hydrochloric acid improves protein digestion and activation of all enzymes. Remember, the acid dump into the duodenum, the first part of the intestine, activates your enzymes, okay? So, but using this, betaine HCl, just hydrochloric acid, during meals is another thing to try when enzymes sometimes haven't worked for you. And you can just do this little simple thing. Take a capsule with each meal, mid-meal, and you build it up until you get a slight warmth sensation and back off by one when you get that warmth sensation. That warmth sensation I could just best describe, because I've done this, is that feeling of being on a cold winter day and drinking hot cocoa or a warm soup. You know how you get that warmth right there? Okay, feels good when you're cold, but if you're adding hydrochloric acid, you don't want to keep dosing to that. You want to back off a little bit. And then you'd experiment with the hydrochloric acid with meals and say, does my burping go away? Does my belching go away? Does the, you know, whatever symptom you're treating, do my brain fog go away after meals? Because those are the kinds of things that you'd be looking for, okay? So hydrochloric acid, another thing to play with unless you have unexplained abdominal pain, active ulcers. So it's a little higher risk because you don't want to put hydrochloric acid directly on an ulcer. Okay, so we're talking about, people do use this all the time, and it's very successful. You just have to be a little smarter about this one. Okay, and if you get symptoms, back off. This is just there for my own amusement. So replace. This is just the boneless chicken ranch, okay? GMOs, food supply. Food supply is important, people, okay? So where do those boneless chicken, where do those little nuggets come from? So replace. The essence of replace is our digestive capacity. Many things can affect it. Now, just a brief aside, I use Bilex Ox Bile for people who have had gallbladders removed especially. You can use certain things to help replace with bile acids, and that can be useful, okay? There's many more things in this. The idea of this talk isn't telling you to overwhelm you with things to try. Start with something simple like a ginger tea, and if that works, yay, or digestive enzymes, or hydrochloric acid. Try those types of things and see, does whatever symptom you're looking for improve, okay? And so, why is this the smartest thing to do? Because this is better than just needing another endoscopy and somebody telling you to go on an antacid for the rest of your life, because that's bad medicine, okay? And what you will get if you ask for it. And so, and there's a time and a place. Do I have people who just can't get away from the Prevacids and Prilosex of the world? Yes. But I say try everything else first, okay? And if you still have, if I had disabling heartburn all the time and the only thing that worked for me was Prilosec or something like it, heck yes, I'd take it, okay? But I'd try everything, single thing else first, right? Okay? Just like most approaches to orthopedic problems, I do everything before surgery, but if I need surgery, I'll do surgery. So remember, that's why you don't want, this is primary care medicine, true primary care medicine, which your Western doctor hasn't been trained in. They've been trained in drugs and surgery, not primary care medicine. So it's not even fair sometimes to ask them this stuff because they don't know it. And they often get pretty uppity if you ask them about things they don't know. No, true. I mean, that's why, but it's supposed to be self-care stuff anyways, okay? This is the kind of things you tried, okay? So re-inoculate. Now, hopefully you didn't add too much. What time is it? 6? I have only 2 hours in. Oh, shit. So much for no tangents, huh? I haven't really been that tangential, I don't think. Anyways, that's your fault. I knew it. Okay, re-inoculate. This stuff is going to be on the website. Most everybody has heard these things, so I'm going to go through. Do the use of antibiotics, especially in our animals, okay, and the feed animals I'm talking about. Hormones in our food supply, overuses of medicine, anti-inflammatory drugs, and things like antacids. Almost everybody has a disruption of your intestinal flora if you look at the balance in their GI tract, especially from a GI effects test, which I've done. We have 10 times the organisms in us that we have our own cells. The metabolic products of these organisms are directly absorbed into your bloodstream. Your GI flora affects your metabolism, your endocrine immune system function pretty much as your liver does. You literally do feel like shit, okay? So it's a truth. That's not a, again, the key part of this understanding of the metabolomic process, meaning your gastrointestinal flora actually being its own organ system, is that yes, you do. That saying, I feel like shit, is an absolute truth. It's not a metaphorical nothing. Okay, yes. We were born in a sterile environment, so the question goes into how do we get these organisms, which is a great question. That comes down from our environment, primarily from birth mom, her breast and everywhere else, her vagina, that's where we get these things from. There were some very interesting studies on probiotics in moms in the last trimester, improving the vaginal flora, decreasing local inflammatory, decreasing preterm birth, improving the amount of flora, because that's what the first... Your first exposure to these organisms is right in the vagina as you're coming out of the cervix, okay? Seriously. And so as you're whooping on out, that's when you get the first gump of that. And so, and then, you know, somebody slaps you around, you start, you know, suckling, and you start bringing in all these organisms, and then they develop their own pattern inside of you, okay? More or less, right? Okay, so, and yes, during our life, a lot of things can affect that, but you have a natural pattern, like a fingerprint, that your body feels best at with these organisms, and it truly is like that. Now, so when we get into re-inoculating, your balance of organisms really is uniquely different, and your set point, and this goes for your skin too, by the way, okay, is your skin has its own little natural balance of organisms that keep you healthy as well too. It's really quite fascinating. Someone used this thing about the human body has 10 to the 13th cells with 23,000 genes. Your digestive tract has over 10 to the 14th logarithmic distance microbial cells with 3.3 million genes. Okay. Once again, if you don't think genetically modified stuff gets gene transfer into your bacteria into you, you're a fool. So if you don't vote for Prop 37, that thinks that you've been listening to too much crap because you have a right to know what's in your food, period, okay? So once again, there is good studies on gene transfer to these bacteria getting into you. So that genetically modified stuff can modify your gene profile. Think about that. And if you think you don't have the right to know about that, good heavens. Sorry. but it just makes sense. Every other country, anyways. you don't have a sterile stomach. You have about 100, this is per grams of cellular component, about 100 bacteria per gram. So very nearly sterile environment in your stomach. 10 to the third cells in the duodenum, the first part of the intestinal tract. Jejunum, 10 to the fourth. And it goes down to your distal colon, over 10 to the 12th cells per gram of poop, basically. Okay. So this is a gob of bacteria. The microbiota, which is basically the organisms you carry, can be viewed as a metabolic organ exquisitely tuned to our physiology that performs functions that we have not had to evolve on our own. This is the proceeding of National Academy of Sciences, by the way. So this is just flat-out science. Which, again, we need to be looking to our scientists in the world for things in our environment. Reinoculate, probiotics, the ingestion of good bacteria. Probiotics means an organism that has been shown to have a beneficial effect. Primarily, we need to know, has that organism been studied? And at least do we know, can it treat antibiotic-associated diarrhea? Can it treat traveler's diarrhea? When you choose a probiotic, you better look for something. There was a symposium recently, actually it's a EPUB right now, it's going to come out in December, about the ethics of probiotics and how most of the stuff in the marketplace is just a huge farce, because it is, okay? And that you're hearing about probiotics or this and that, none of them have been tested in any rigid scientific way, and they're just people saying a lot of stuff to make money out of you. However, like any good lie, there's some truth to it, because some organisms do have a benefit. So if you want to work with probiotics, look for ones that have been tested and have been used by doctors like myself successfully, meaning when we treat something and we do a still test afterwards, you're getting them. They're staying there. They're doing something. So unless you do that on your own, do that yourself and have that kind of testing, and you've treated hundreds if not thousands of people this way, you doing it on your own makes no sense without getting some advice in this area. Okay? So yes, there are good ones. And this is where I want to focus on. They're well marketed and poorly researched. That's most probiotic supplements. Okay? These are ideas of good ones, not that there aren't any others. Culturelle has great evidence for a lot of things, but not everything. So it's one of the best heat-stable bacteria, and it just broke the recent rule that if you see it on TV, it can't be good for you. Culturelle started advertising. Damn it. So my, that rule that I followed for so long has just been broken. Okay, so I admit it. So it is one of the good ones. It's been studied, but it doesn't treat everything. So, for instance, I was reading a review of mixed probiotics versus Culturelle and helping eliminate H. pylori from your system. And if you take antibiotics for H. pylori, this one isn't the best one. Something like the Ultraflora, these ones turned out to be better. And this is what we're going to find. There's certain conditions where certain probiotics do better than others. Unless you yourself know this research or the doctor you don't know this research, get help. Okay? This is a prescription probiotic. It's actually quite good. It's actually quite expensive as well, and almost it's never seen it covered by insurance yet. Okay, so are there prescription probiotics for inflammatory bowel disease and things? Yes. And since they have research, even the GI doctors are getting into this, by the way, because it's all throughout their literature. The microbiota having a huge effect on all those functional disorders, the irritable bowels, the heartburns that they can't deal with, they're actually realizing there really is something important going on here that our body's telling us. This is a complicated slide, but it'll be like, it just goes over the fact that the gut-brain hypothesis, autism, ADD, depression, anxiety, all linked with imbalances in your intestinal tract, including the microbiota, okay? Asthma, allergy, all linked with that. Hypertension, biliary disease, colon cancer, peripheral vascular disease, obesity, inflammatory bowel disease, all altered xenobiotic and drug metabolism. That means that these bacteria actually help with your metabolism of toxins that go into your body as well. They're there to help you. We're doing so many things in today's world that throw that system off. That's part of the reason we're so toxic as well. Most people know that I have a basic nutritional protocol. If you're breathing, you're on a multi, fish oils, and D. You could seriously consider making a fourth thing being a probiotic because it's that universally helpful. And safe to do, okay? And so probiotics are there to help balance your flora. And just a second, and I recommend, we were talking about this earlier with someone, rotating monthly. Probiotics, acidophilus, acid-loving, does better in an acid environment than an enzyme environment. That's why we take probiotics on an empty stomach where it's more acid, because they are acidophilizing. They love acid, okay? That's how you remember when to take them. And take away from any prescription antibiotic, of course, because you don't want it killing it. And rotating monthly is a basic idea because we don't know what the best organisms. When you see this stuff advertised in the stores, this one's for my sinuses, and this is for my vagina, and this is for my whatever, there's just marketing you, okay? There isn't proof yet that we know which organisms do the best in those areas. I don't doubt that we'll get there, but we are not there yet. I promise you we're not. So if you see somebody selling, it's like most of the vitamins that are for 50 and over. They're just for like for everybody else. They just said they're trying to nail you. And so most of the probiotics and things that say they're for this specific condition, the research isn't there yet because it's going to be this complicated. Everybody, it's a fingerprint. It's your race plays a role in this. Your sex plays a role in this in terms of what's a probiotic for you. So it's a good idea to rotate many so you at least have a better chance of getting more of the ones that are good for you. Does that make sense? And you prevent resistance if you have candida, if you have parasites. You prevent resistance. If you keep giving the same organism, those bad guys in there will become resistant. And there's always bad guys, bad players in your intestinal tract for some reason. And we'll talk the concept of prebiotics and symbiotics. Prebiotics... So, I'm sorry, did you have a question? I apologize. Okay, yes. Remember the remove concept. One of the things sometimes we have to do is help remove the crap that's in there. Get out bad foods. And this will be a lot like working with your yard. If you pull out weeds and you don't do anything else, weeds come back, okay? So this is a really important concept. So the first thing you have to check up before you do things like prebiotics, which are like fertilizer, okay? Think of probiotics like putting grass there, okay? So you want to pull out the stuff, remove things, throw in some seeds, probiotics, and then prebiotics, things, and by the way, most good probiotics, the ultrafloras and things in this world, have some prebiotic fertilizer to help them grow, okay? So they're called symbiotics. It's just a symbiotic is just a probiotic and a prebiotic together, okay? They include soluble fibers that seem to help the growth of healthy bacteria. So that's a way of adding things in. Sorry about that. You get picked on. And so I try to go over this way, too. And so so that you can find these kinds of things, arabinogalactans, there's many of them out there that can help you grow the probiotic. The only reason sometimes to focus on prebiotics is if some people just seem to be intolerant of almost any probiotic. They just don't seem to do well with it. So sometimes you can just bypass that by giving them prebiotics, and that fertilizer will help the good stuff grow. You are taking a little bit of a risk, though. If you have a lot of candida in there and you throw in a prebiotic, you got a lot more candida. Okay, so you have to be careful about that one thing. That's why it's best to weed first. Okay, and so the primary fuel for your intestinal cells come from short-chain fatty acids produced when good bacteria, probiotics, digest good fiber, prebiotics, and fiber in our diet. Okay, that's the fuel for your colon. Okay, and so, and I'll be there in just a second. So the fuel of your colon is especially a short-chain fatty acid known as N-butyrate. Okay. Butyric acid is what gives butter its name. This is also partly why ghee is such a perfect food, which is ghee is clarified butter. That's its own subject. But organic butter that's been clarified, ghee, is a great food. It provides butyrate to your intestinal cells as well for you and for your intestine. The best way to get N-butyrate, the short-chain fatty acid, is to actually have your body make it, which means get good bacteria in there and give it healthy fibers. Yes.
What is Candida? How do I know I have it?
Well, Candida syndromes are one of those things. Candida is a yeast organism. Okay. Candida syndromes is one of those very simple things. It's just one of the debate points in Western medicine. Western physicians, Candida syndromes don't exist unless you're dying from chemotherapy. Period. Okay. Natural medicine, almost anything can be blamed on Candida. So you have this kind of battleground. Okay. Because there's no perfect test. Because the argument from the Western doctors, well, everybody's got some in there. How do you know if it's overgrowing or not? How do we know what's wrong in that person? And the answer is we don't have an absolute. We have to look at their symptoms. I primarily do stool testing looking for overgrowth of Candida to ensure something is there and then treat it accordingly. But Candida is one of the removed things. It's its own subject. Okay. So the answer to your question is you test for it, primarily stool testing. That's the thing I think is best. There is no gold standard test to say if somebody is having a problem with Candida. That's the issue. And that makes it subject to becoming one of those airy-fairy things we don't know for sure if it's there or not. So the Western doctor doesn't like it because there's not a gold standard test. Okay. Anything. So when you hear, and when I say any, no, it's true. It's anything. So that's the problem. There's no specific symptom. It can be digestive upset. It can be rashes. It can be fatigue. It can be aches and pains. It can be fevers. It can be any symptom. That's the problem, is almost anything has been linked with Candida overgrowth. But primarily gastrointestinal problems, of course, diarrhea more so than constipation, irritable bowel types things, along with any number of metabolic things that can occur downstream from there. That's the problem, is the intestinal tract, if it's thrown off, can affect every single thing. Your stress responses can be affected by this. So many people with anxiety, for instance, actually have a disruption of their intestinal tract. If that's treated, their anxiety will get better. Okay? And that can be Candida. Okay, and that's the problem. It's a non-specific thing. I'm not trying to be vague. It really is. Okay, I'm not shirking the question. And so if you were going to say classic things, oh, rashes and fatigue and aches and pains and diarrhea, and those are typical things. A woman especially who has recurring candidal vaginitis, that's a sign. Recurring thrush is another sign. The fingernail stuff, by the way, has nothing to do with what we're talking about. If you get fingernail fungus, it's a completely different organism that has no real relationship to this. So, okay, so that was, I think, the end. Yeah, okay, so that's the end of re-inoculate. And this is unwittingly, Palmer stepped out of the jungle into headhunter folklore forever. Yes. Greek yogurt, yes. Well, again, the key is it come from a raw organic source, okay? Whether it's Greek or not isn't that important, okay? So, and when it comes to organisms and their food, so I'm just not here this time. Last talk, somebody was bringing up this person who has this, you know, multi-bazillion organism yogurt that they're making. The question from my medical standpoint was, has it been proven to treat a disease or not? And if it hasn't, then I'm not saying that probiotic source from the yogurt, from the kefirs, from the fermented foods aren't good. I'm not saying they're not, by the way. I'm just saying as I don't know. As a doctor, I try to deal with as little as I can with the I don't knows of the world. Okay, I want to treat with things that I know work. Okay, and so can you recommend yogurts with active cultures in them to people as part of balancing? And the answer is yes. But then when you start getting into the activities and the other things, you're just you're looking at high-priced garbage, yes. So you things that haven't been proven to work. And so you want to focus on things that have something other than a marketing campaign going for them. They actually use science. Okay. Questions? Yes? Inulin? Now, inulin is a prebiotic. It is a non-digestible fiber that is good for growth of bacteria. You'll find inulin in some of the good symbiotics and good probiotics out there. Yes, stevia is a prebiotic as well, by the way. Okay. So, but I'm careful with, again, any sweetener that's not associated with calories for the time being, I look at as being careful about because it can confuse your brain and increase your appetite. Okay. So, repair, fourth R, promise, okay? This is, and actually what I focus mainly on over here is of these repair formulas because this is a key thing. Sometimes you've done enough damage, not intentionally, you know, life and things like that, done enough damage that you need to repair things before things will get better, okay? And so the optimal repair formula that I keep coming back to for 12 to 13 years is basically this glutagenics. It's a combination 3 times a day, between meals for 4 to 8 weeks, help heal things. If you have recurring digestive problems, how long whether you need to do this depends on. Do I have chronic reflux? Help heal your GI tract. It's a powerful thing to do. It has therapeutic levels of glutamine, aloe vera, and licorice. Now, I promise I'm going to do more. There are many other things, and look at them. There's Metagenics, this GI Revive. Why are there so many formulas like this? Because they're healthful and there's a big market and yes, people are trying to make money out of you on these things. At the very least, repair formulas are a part of healing things. They are something to keep around should you injure yourself again. What do I mean by that? You go on a trip, everything goes out of whack and your whatever is back, your heartburn, go through a little healing cycle using the 4 R's, okay, and then go away from this and just look at this as a great symptom reliever, but not only a symptom reliever, but something that helps you repair the underlying problem as compared to making the underlying problem go worse. There's something similar, a protein called inflammacore, anti-inflammatory proteins. There's lots of things in the functional medicine world where people are finding things to help you heal yourself and make the need for the drugs less and less important. Maintenance. So if you have said, Gary, I've had heartburn every day all my life. I don't think it's going away. Well, try these things. Sometimes it goes away. But if it comes down to it and you just need it, if you use aloe vera juice, George's is pretty much the only game in town. They harvest appropriately. It tastes like water. Lily of the Desert is decent, but it's really got a pretty nasty taste to it. Everything else from every other place isn't as good as this because it isn't taken care of. So the active mucopolysaccharides present in aloe vera juice are there, so you're really not getting aloe vera juice. Okay, and so George's is a great aloe vera juice. Glutamine can be done on its own. DGL. DGL is just licorice. The stuff that can increase your blood pressure is called glycyrrhizin. This is deglycyrrhizinated licorice. Okay, now you don't. All that means is you can take this form of licorice without any concern about driving your blood pressure up. Okay, and so the herbal world, I respect this so much. I saw this guy today, and you know, there was using one of those male enhancement things. Okay, and his blood pressure's through the roof. Okay, and so you go, huh? And who knows if that male enhancement thing didn't have a drug in it? Who knows if it didn't have high levels of Yohimbe, which has been known to raise blood pressure? The natural things in the world, he was claiming that really worked for him. He was pretty happy about that. The 230 over 110 blood pressure, he probably wasn't as happy about in the trip to the emergency room. Again, it really worked. I don't know what was in there, but it worked. So on that order, yeah, you know, you got to be careful. This things in the natural world, I don't buy things online. I mean, I wouldn't because you don't know if you're just getting a drug in there and you're using an unlicensed drug. What I'm trying to get across, Furthermore, even the natural things can work, but they can cause side effects too. So it's good to get guidance from people who know if you're not getting there on your own. And when I say that, we're trying to give you a broader range of things to look, array of things to look at tonight to see how you can heal yourself so that when you come to me, seriously, it's really kind of neat after doing talks like this for years. I see people and I'm, listen, you've done everything you need to do. It's time to order some tests because you have done most of the things I would have told you to do if I didn't do testing. So that's why I like to see only the people who just can't find the answers on their own because you need help sometimes, okay? Yes?
So I did all that, and so I think I'm repaired.
Yes.
That's
a great question. The point, and this is the perfect question, because once you've done the healing things, hopefully you don't need to anymore. However, sometimes, you know how this can be, sometimes just even the littlest thing can throw you off. One too long car trip and your system has heartburn again or something, you know what I'm saying? And so it's good to have this as a tool to pull out when you need it. That's why I keep on using this as tools in the toolbox, okay? You know, hammers are great things, but don't go running around your house with a hammer, okay? So put it down and use it when you need to. It's a great tool. These things you don't necessarily need to run around with all the time. The things that most people stay with are the enzymes if they really work for them, the probiotics on a regular basis. The repair formulas are one of those things. Hopefully, if you've healed things up, you don't need to stay on. Now, just a quick thing on the repair. Other things can be necessary sometimes. If you are constipated, you need to poop. And when I say constipated, you should be pooping 2 to 3 times a day. Okay? If you're not, you're constipated. Okay? And when I... So, now, I don't want you to run home and take laxatives to do this. Okay? Just make yourself go. Okay? Do things to balance your colon. If you are constipated, the first thing to think about, stress, lack of exercise, hydration. Is my constipation a sign of being too stressed? I am anal retentive, okay? It's a very common cause for it, I promise you. Am I dehydrated? One of your body's many cries for water? Probably are. Am I exercise deficient? Most of you are. So, and remember, we want the symptom to drive a change in behavior, not just about taking stuff. Okay. Now, however, magnesium depletion is especially one of them, is the most common mineral deficiency around. So, if you're almost most of the medicines that deplete magnesium, I see this all the time. The person is taking a diuretic that spares potassium but causes depletion of magnesium. They're taking an antacid, which causes loss of acid. They don't digest the proteins. The amino acids can't glom onto their minerals, and that causes them to be magnesium depleted. They are stressed, which causes magnesium depletion. They eat poor foods and pastas and things that just have no nutrition, and they get magnesium depleted. Then they take 1,500 milligrams of calcium, binding up their magnesium transporters, and they are, furthermore, magnesium depleted. Okay? So I can't emphasize this enough. Magnesium depletion is a huge thing that if you're cramping, tight muscles, there's all kinds of signs of magnesium depletion. So if you take enough magnesium, you will always treat constipation. And I say always, you will always. Okay? And because there's only one side effect. This is assuming normal kidney function. If you don't have normal kidney function, talk to your doctors. But if you have normal kidney function, you cannot take enough magnesium to hurt yourself because you will get the squirts. Okay? And you'll go, damn, I guess I took too much magnesium. Okay? As somebody the other day, it's like, man, I have this diarrheal illness. And you go, are you still taking your magnesium? Oh! It's like, you know, yes, if you have a diarrheal illness, stop your magnesium. It's not a good idea. Triphala is a great herb that can balance as well. Get yourself pooping. It's one of your greatest detox mechanisms. Think about colonics. Think about other things. I know I got to go. Omega-3 fatty acids are great for the gastrointestinal tract. Enteric coated peppermint is great for bowel spasms. Spascopyrrole is a homeopathic remedy that is also great for bowel spasms, so if you have intestinal spasms. There are many forms of natural anti-inflammatories. Cat's claw especially, that has been proven to be a great anti-inflammatory for both the intestinal tract and for the rest of your system. Okay, so that's a good thing to be aware of. Make sure you work on all aspects of the 4R at the same time. That's, I promise you, this has happened so many times. I tried enzymes and they didn't work. I tried probiotics. Try these things in conjunction. That's how they work better. And then everybody's... Oh, reminders. Make a wish. Thank you.